So, good evening, and tonight's topic is Kisui Rosh for women. I'm not 100% sure how it becomes a contemporary halachic issue, in the sense that we'll see this goes back to the beginning of the origins of halacha, but I suppose it's something which has got relevance in contemporary society, so it counts as a contemporary halachic issue, and certainly it is an issue which concerns many people wonder about. And there is a contemporary dimension to it, not necessarily anything significantly different in the past 10 years to what it was previously. But if you look back, certainly in times of the Middle Ages, in Western society as well, you know, all women, certainly married women, covered their hair. If you look in, you know, books, pictures from that time, you'll find that women invariably covered their hair. So therefore, for Jewish women to cover their hair was nothing exceptional and was nothing particularly challenging. Nowadays, of course, most women, certainly in a Western society, don't cover their hair. So it's something which is rather different, rather special for Jewish women. Having said that, of course, the past perhaps 10 or 15 years, the notion of sort of having headscarves in the workplace and that sort of thing is much more acceptable than what it was maybe 20, 30 years ago. Partly because of Muslim women, partly because of just sometimes it's regarded as being trendy, etc. So that, you know, perhaps also has a bearing on the contemporary aspect of things. So what I want to do this evening is to go through some of the sources which discuss this topic. We're not going to be exhaustive. We're not going to discuss every point. This is, you know, could be a series of 2 or 3 hour long shiurim. We're going to try and deal with it in 45 minutes, but at least give ourselves hopefully a greater understanding of what's going on. So there is a makor in the Torah for the notion of women having their hair covered. It comes up in Parashat Naso, Bamidbar, Perek Hei, Pasuk Yud Chet, as part of the ritual which affects the sota woman. A sota woman is a woman who's suspected of an adulterous relationship by her husband, and under certain circumstances, she's brought to the Beit HaMikdash, where she has to go through a certain very degrading ceremony. And part of that ceremony is Vehemit HaKohen Et HaIsha Lifnei Adonai, that the Kohen will stand the woman before Hashem, Ufarai Et Rosh HaIsha, and he will uncover the head of the woman. He will uncover her head. And if you look in the, what I've got here is the third source, bolded, this is a Gemara from Masechet Ketubot in the 7th Perek, Dafayin Bet Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says, Rosha Parua Doraitahi, that Issa against the woman having her hair uncovered is actually a biblical prohibition. Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says that we just saw Farait Rosh Aisha, that the Kohen should uncover the woman's head. Tan V'tanadvei Rabbi Yishmael, and it was taught in the Beit Medrash of Rabbi Yishmael, Azhara, if not Yisrael, Shelo Yetzu Bifrua Rosh. This is a warning to Jewish women that they mustn't go out with their hair uncovered. So what we're seeing here is a limud from this pasuk, Farat Rosh HaIsha, the implication being, the inference being that until this point, a Jewish woman's hair is, or head is covered, and it's only as part of this ceremony that she can have her head uncovered, and therefore the assumption is that under all other circumstances she has to have her hair her head covered. So that's what we learn out from the pasuk, and there's certainly a scriptural basis for the notion of women covering their heads. According to most poskim, it is d'oraita, as this Gemara has indicated. The Trumat Hadeshen is the opinion that it's an asmachta ba'alma, that it's not really d'oraita, but it's just sort of linking it in with a pasuk. But certainly it goes back, even according to the Trumat Hadeshen, goes back at least to Talmudic times, and we'll see immediately that it goes back at least to Mishnaic times, even if you say that it's not d'oraita. But most Rishonim, most authorities are of the opinion that it's d'oraita. So what's the nature of this mitzvah of head covering? Let's look at the Mishnah in Masechet Ketubot on the same daf. So the Mishnah says, "Ve'elu yotzot shelo b'chtuva." So there's all of us, I think, are familiar with the concept of a ketubah. The ketubah referring not just to the document as it's read out under the chuppah, but a ketubah meaning the financial terms of reference in that document, that in the case of divorce or death of the husband, the wife gets a payment known as the ketubah payment. But there are certain instances where a woman would get divorced and she's forfeited the right to her ketubah payment. And that's what the Mishnah's listing here. The Mishnah's saying which categories of women forfeit their right to the ketubah payment when they get divorced. Ha'overet al dat Moshe v'Yehudit. A woman who transgresses dat Moshe v'Yehudit, Jewish religious practice, Mosaic religious practice, and Judaic religious practice. So what is this Mosaic Jewish practice and Judaic Jewish practice? Ve'ezohi dat Moshe. So what would be examples of dat Moshe? Ma'achilato she'inu musa mishamshato nidav lo katala chalav noderet ve'ena makayemet. Various ways in which she causes her husband to sin. So she gives him, food which isn't tithed, or she is intimate with him whilst she's a nida, etc., etc. There she's transgressing dat Moshe, she's transgressing Mosaic law, and forcing him against his will to transgress Mosaic law. And therefore, when he divorces her, because of this, she's forfeited her right to any ketubah payment. Ve'zohi dat Yehudit, what is the Judaic practice that might cause her to forfeit her ketubah payment? Yotzav rosha parua. So the first example here we've got is Yotzah. She goes out into the street, rosha parua, and she has her head uncovered. She hasn't got a hat on or whatever. That's called overet al dat Yehudit. She's transgressing Judaic custom. And that's regarded as significant enough that if her husband divorces his wife because of it, she's forfeited her rights to the ketubah payment. So if we look in the Gemara says, hold on a minute. The Mishnah just said, Ve'ezohi dat Yehudit yotzav rosha parua. This is dat Yehudit. This is Judaic practice for women not to go out without their heads covered. And this woman has gone against Judaic practice. Rosha parua d'oraitahi. Judaic practice. It's not just Judaic practice that women cover their heads. It's d'oraita. It's from the Torah. As we just read this passage, Dichtiv ufarai drosh aisha, v'tanu dvei Rabbi Yishmael, azarai livnot Yisrael, shelo yesu b'fro arosh. That Jewish women shouldn't go out with their heads uncovered. So how can you say it's only dat Yehudit? It's only Jewish custom. So the Gemara answers, d'oraita kalta shape dami. From the Torah, mid'oraita, it's enough for a woman to wear a kalta. Now, it's a little uncertain what exactly a kalta is, but a kalta certainly seems to be some sort of inferior type of head covering. We'll discuss in a moment what exactly that is. But d'oraita, she needs to at least wear a kalta. Dat Yehudit afil kalta namiaso, but by Jewish practice, Even a kalta is prohibited. That's not sufficient. So what we're seeing from this Gemara is there are two levels of head covering, if you like. One is on a Doraita level, a Torah level, and that requires a minimal head covering, whether that's minimal in terms of size or in terms of quality. And then we've got a rabbinic requirement, or what we call dat yehudit, Judaic practice, demands that a woman wears something more significant. Now, of course, the question comes up, where does this notion of dat yehudit come from? Where do we get this idea of something being dat yehudit? Is this something which Chazal sat down and enacted? Or is it perhaps a reflection of Jewish practice, meaning that most Jewish women dressed in a very modest way, and therefore that became dat yehudit, that became the way that Jewish women dress modestly? Or is it that it was legislated? So let's look at the Rambam, who reflects this Gemara that we've just seen. So the Rambam in Perek Tkaf Dalet of Hilchot Ishut, in Halacha Yud Aleph, he says, "Ve'elu hein advarim she'im astachat mehen avrad dat Moshe." So there are certain things that if a woman does any of them, she's transgressed that Moshe, that's Mosaic law, Torah law. "Yotza bashuk us'a rosha galui." If she goes out into the shuk, into the street, and she's not got her head covered. So we're seeing on a biblical level, she needs to have her head covered. And if she doesn't, she's in violation of Dat Moshe, of Mosaic law. Ve'ezohi Dat Yehudit, then in Halacha Yud Bet, the Rambam says, what is Dat Yehudit? What is what we're calling Judaic law? Hu minhag hatzniut shenagu benot Yisrael. So the Rambam is certainly indicating this is something organic, rather than legislated, though obviously at some point it became legislated. But he's saying this is the minhag of tzniut, the practice of the modest practice that is observed by Benot Yisrael, by Jewish women. And these are the things that if she did any of them, then she's violated that you did. The first of them is Yotza la shukula mavoy mefulash. She goes out into the shuk, into the street, or la mavoy mefulash, or a fairly open area. Vrosha parua, and she's got her head uncovered. Ve'ena leha redid kechol hanashim. Even though, and she's not wearing a redid. A redid is a more significant type of head covering, like women do. Even though she's got her hair covered with a mitpachat, with some sort of cloth. So what the Rambam is saying here is that on a Torah level, there's a requirement that a woman has her hair covered, or her head covered. Rambam's lashon is sa'ar rosha. That she should have her hair covered. But on a biblical level, any type of hair covering is going to be sufficient. On a rabbinic level, it needs to be something more significant. Perhaps, seeing as the Rambam's talking here about minhag hatzniut, the observance of modesty, so it needs to be something more modest. Now again, modesty can have, in this context, can have two meanings. It could either mean that it's got to cover a greater amount of her hair than what's required biblically, or it could mean that it's just sort of a bit more dignified, meaning that, you know, this the first thing that we're mentioning, you know, the minimal head covering might be that a woman can go out with something tied around her head. But that doesn't look very dignified in certain contexts, and it's hard to get it into the, you know, necessarily into the modern context. But I suppose if you go back to a pre-20th century context. So, you know, you think about it in terms of, you know, nowadays, you know, what people wear out in the streets, or perhaps one should say what people don't wear out in the streets, you know, life has become very casual. But, you know, once upon a time, a person, whether a man or a woman, you know, could be fully covered and not exposing anything. But, you know, you go out wearing your pyjama top or a vest, you know, I could go out in the street wearing a long-sleeved vest. You know, I'm not exposing anything. But, you know, this is my underwear. You know, it's not appropriate to walk out in the street, you know, dressed like that. So nowadays, you know, plenty of people on a summer's day, men and women walk around the streets just wearing a vest. And some of those vests, you know, are barely vests even. But, you know, you go back, 100 years, if a person went out into the street, you know, just wearing a vest, you know, even though they might be covered, they're not properly dressed. You know, it's an embarrassment to go out, you know, dressed like that. So it's difficult to, describe that in a contemporary context, because in a contemporary context, modes of dress are so casual. But, you know, in certain contexts, that's not the case. So, you know, I think in B'nai Brak, you know, if a man went out into the street, you know, wearing his vest, that would be undignified. In London, you know, it's not necessarily regarded as being undignified. So what it might very well be here is that Rambam is saying that that she's gone out into the shuk, her head is covered with something, but not in a dignified way. She looks like she's, wearing, you know, her shower cap. You know, I suppose a shower cap would be a good example of this. You know, a crinkly shower cap, you know, that looks like you're just out of the shower. You know, that for most people would not be a dignified way to show up to shul on a Shabbat morning, as this is your new headwear. So that would be Dat Yehudit, which one is leaving out. So what we've got so far is, as I say, two levels. There's a biblical level, what we call Dat Moshe, Mosaic practice, and then we've got what seems to be a rabbinic level of Dat Yehudit, Judaic practice. Judaic practice demands of a woman that she, I'm going to say, covers her hair or covers her head properly. I don't know exactly what properly means at this point in time, but that's, if you like, the Rambam doesn't say it in that lashon, but that's essentially what it's saying. You know, there's a proper way that a woman should cover her head, and Dat Yehudit demands of a woman that she does it in that way. Now, what's not entirely clear from this is certainly, on a Doraita level, is what's the reason for this? Is it simply a consideration of modesty, you know, that a Jewish woman is expected to dress in a particularly modest fashion, and that includes having her head covered? Or is it to do with erva, that a woman's hair is regarded as a certain nakedness? And in actual fact, it could be, you know, it could be both of them combined, or it could be one or the other. Certainly this notion of Dat Yehudit, of Judaic practice, seems to be a consideration of modesty. But there's also certainly a notion of erva, of what we would call nakedness. If we look in the Gemara in Masechet Brachot, Daf Kaf Dalet Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshit, Se'ar Ba'isha Erva. A woman's hair is regarded as being her nakedness. Shene'emar, as we've got a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Sa'areich Ke'eder Ha'izim. This pasuk, your hair is like a flock of goats, and this is lauding the beauty of a woman's hair in the context of other parts of her body, which are also lauded there in Shir Hashirim. So that would indicate that a woman's hair is erva. Now the Gemara says, in the context of this discussion, you know, so what? You know, why do we care if it's erva? So the Gemara says, because if her husband wants to say Kriyat Shema, he's not allowed to say Kriyat Shema or any other brachot whilst he's looking at her hair. It's like looking at an exposed part of her body. So what we could say is that we've got two issues now. One is an issue of tzniut, of modesty. There are certain contexts where that requirement for modesty is not called for in a private environment. The requirements of modesty are obviously different to those in a public environment. And there's also a consideration of erva. So that might mean, even where the considerations of modesty aren't relevant, the consideration of erva is relevant. So the next point I want to touch on is the question of exactly, or the questions I want to touch on, is how should we apply this halakha of a woman having her head head covered? And the first point to look at is who does this apply to? If we look in the Rambam of Perek Kaf Aleph Hilchot Isurei Bia, Halacha Yud Zayin, the Rambam says, Lo yalchu benot Yisrael prue rosh bashuk. So Jewish women shouldn't go out prue rosh with their heads uncovered in the shuk, in the marketplace, public marketplace. Achat penuya v'achat eshetish. So the Rambam makes no distinction between a penuya, an unmarried woman, and an eshetish, a woman who is married. According to the Rambam, everybody has to have their hair covered. But that's not the the view of all Rishonim. We'll see there are other Rishonim who disagree and say that in actual fact women don't have to have all their hair covered. That single women don't have to have their hair covered. If we look in the Shulchan Aruch, we find a certain contradiction. On the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch in Eben HaEzer, Simon Kaf Aleph, says, Lo teilachna benot Yisrael prot rosh bashuk, echad pnuya v'echad eshetish. So the Mechaber quotes the Rambam exactly, and says that benot Yisrael, Jewish women, can't go around with their heads uncovered, whether they're single or they're married, following the Rambam. But then if we look in Hilchot Kriyat Shema, or Hilchot Tefillah, Simon Ayin Hay, will say, Hilchot Kriyat Shema, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch says, Se'ar sheli shoshe d'arka l'chasot, hair that a woman usually covers, asolik krok k'negdo, you can't say Shema whilst you're watching, seeing it, afilu ishto, even if it's your own wife, aval betulot shedarkan le'lech pruot harosh mutar. But single women, betulot, literally virgins, who go around with their heads uncovered, mutar, it's not a problem. So now we've got a contradiction in the Shulchan Aruch. On the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch in Eben HaEzer has paskin like the Rambam, that this applies equally to married and unmarried women, whereas in Orach Chaim, in Hilchot Kriyat Shema, he says, no, it only applies to married women, it doesn't apply to unmarried women. So, first of all, how are we going to deal with this contradiction in the Shulchan Aruch? And once we've dealt with or answered the contradiction, we need to understand why there might be a difference between, or how there should be a difference between married and unmarried women. So the Beit Shmuel on the page in Eben HaEzer explains that in actual fact, when the Rambam is talking about a penuya, penuya literally means an unattached woman. He's not talking about a betula. A betula is a woman who's never been married. So the Rambam is saying that where he says achat penuya v'achat eshetish means that whether a woman's married or she's not a virgin, meaning that in the normal cases would be that she's either a widow or a divorcee. So even a widow or a divorcee still has to have her head covered. And then in Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim, where it's talking about Hilchot Kriyat Shema, so then it's talking about Betulot. Betulot are women who've never been married, virgins. A virgin doesn't have to have her hair covered at all. However, a woman who has been married does have to have her hair covered. And that's that would be the way that we resolve the apparent contradiction in the Shulchan Aruch. The Bach, in his commentary to Orach Chaim, says we have to say that betulot don't have to cover their hair, because the Gemara in Masechet Ketubot tells us that one of the ways that a betula can be identified is that, and therefore you know how much should be paid in her ketubah arrangement, is if she gets married with her hair uncovered. If her hair's uncovered, that's a sign that she was a betula. So therefore we're seeing a notion that certainly a betula doesn't have to have her hair covered. So that seems to be how we deal with it. That the way the Beit Shmuel and the Bach understand the Rambam is that the Rambam, where he says Achat Pnuya V'Achatei Shetish, is only talking about women who are or have been married. But if the woman's a betula and has never been married, so then she doesn't need to cover her hair. The Magen Avraham suggests that maybe women should cover their hair. Rav Avadia Yosef suggests that some women certainly have, it's a good practice for them to cover their hair, at least for tefillah, even if they're not married and never have been married. But that's not generally the practice. So that deals with the who. We've also got the question of how much hair should be covered. It's not clear at all from the Gemara whether we're talking about the entire head being covered or just part of it. And we've already sort of flagged up a little bit, perhaps a difference between hair and head, in the sense, the Rambam. In Hilchot Ishut, he said, Yotza Bashukus Sa'ar Rosh HaGalui. Okay, the hair on her head is uncovered. Whereas in the next halacha, he talks about Vrosha Parua. Her head is uncovered. So are these synonymous terms, or are they different terms? Is it possible that the rule applies to her head, but not hair that extends beyond her head? Or is it, possible that it applies equally to all her hair as well? So let's look at the Shulchan Aruch again, the passage that we just saw. The Rama, so we'll read it through. The Shulchan Aruch said, "Sa'ashel isha shedarka lechasot asur likrot kenegda." So the hair of a woman which is usually covered, you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in its presence. But for betulot, it's permitted. And then the Rama says, and this is based on the Rashba, that's also the din as far as the hair which comes out michutz latzamatan, out of their snood. That's basically what a tzama seems to be. Some sort of snood or hat that a woman wears. So there's a little bit of hair that protrudes. I don't know how much from the from the Rashba. It's not clear whether he's talking about a few strands, or he's talking about a whole fringe, or he's talking about shoulder length ponytails. I don't know what he's referring to there. But, he's certainly indicating that there is a notion of a certain amount of hair protruding from under the head covering. The Shita Mekubetzet at the bottom of the page quotes Rashi, which indicates that Rashi thinks that no hair should be protruding. It's certainly clear that the Rashba, and in his footsteps, the Rama recognized the possibility that some hair, at least, will be protruding. And it might be that the Mechaber also holds like that, because he says, Sa'asheli shashe darka lechasot, the hair that's usually covered, but there are bits of hair that are not covered. So that would indicate, perhaps, that not the entire head of hair has to be covered. As I say, it doesn't indicate really how much of the hair has to be covered. If we look in the Mishnah Brura has a very interesting passage. We'll read through that together. So the Mishnah Brura says, "Ritzon Olamar, what's going on here? Shemilvad kovash al rosha yesh la tzemet, besides the cap that a woman is wearing, she's got some sort of tzemet. It's something maybe like a headband which keeps the hair in to make sure that it isn't flying everywhere. But a little bit, that you can't keep in, and that protrudes from the tzemet, the Rashba is lenient about that. So certainly the Mishnah Brura's understanding is, we're not talking about, long hair coming out from under a hat. We're talking about, just a little bit, it's very easy when a woman, she's covering her hair, but, strands over the course of the day, strands get out, strands escape. She's got long hair, at the back, sometimes it's a bit difficult to tuck it all in, it keeps coming out. We're not talking about, long braids, locks of hair, on show. Mishnah Brura says, we're talking about a small amount of hair that's escaped. So you don't need to worry about that. However, he says, of a Zohar Parshat Naso, Hechmir Ma'od Sheloi Trae Shum Sear Meisha. He says the Zohar in Parshat Naso is very, very strict that no hair whatsoever should protrude. And he quotes from it, it says that Lo Yechamun Sara Chada Mireisha, not even one hair should appear. And quoting the Zohar, he says that a woman who's not careful about this, then her it brings sakana to the household, and her children aren't going to excel. But if she is careful about it, then her children and her husband will all excel, and presumably she'll excel as well. He doesn't mention that, so that must go without saying. And then at the end, he quotes the last two lines. He quotes, he says, "V'katav amagin Avram deraui linhog kahazohar." It's correct to follow the Zohar. Of Yoma Ita B'mar said to Kimchit, and the Gemara in Yoma and Dafman Mem Zayin Amud Aleph has the story of a woman called Kimchit. Bizchut Hatzniut Hayatera Shayataba, she was particularly modest in this regard. Shelora U Korot Beita Imre Chaluka, Yatsu Imre Chaluka, that the beams in her house never saw any of her hair. She had, the Gemara says, seven children who were Kohanim Gedolim. So that's pretty good. But the point is, the Mishnah Brura is certainly taking a very maximalist approach as far as Kisui Rosh is concerned, and his view is that as much hair as possible should be covered, possibly even more than possible, meaning that he thinks that according to the Zohar, Ra'ui Linhog Kazai, he quotes the Magen Avraham, that that is really good practice. Having said that, the Gemara in Yoma indicates that this was, perhaps a special practice of Kimchit. Firstly, it's not clear whether we're talking about, Kimchit was particular, that even when she was at home alone, she never uncovered her hair. Or we're saying that Kimchit was particular that, not only didn't she uncover her hair at home, but she didn't let any of it, protrude. But it seems that Kimchit was extra pious in this regard. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in Igrot Moshe Eben Ha'ezer, Chelek Aleph, Simon Nun Chet, where he discusses these issues, and he, makes reference to the opinion of the Chatam Sofer. So the Chatam Sofer was particularly strict in two regards. Chatam Sofer was restrict that, number one, he held that no hair whatsoever should protrude, against the Rashba and the Rama. And he also held that even Bechadra, even when a woman's in her own house, her own bedroom, by herself, she shouldn't uncover her hair. That's, she should have her hair covered at all times. So that's the view of the Chatam Sofer. That's a very strict view. And Rav Moshe Feinstein acknowledges that it's a very strict view and is a little bit surprised by it. and it's a fair-sized tshuva he has on this this matter. But the long and the short of it is, he demonstrates that the Chatam Sofer is really a chumra. It's good to follow the Chatam Sofer if one's able to, but a woman who feels she doesn't want to follow the Chatam Sofer and wants to have a little bit of hair protruding, or wants to have her hair uncovered in the privacy of her own home, then it's reasonable for her to do so, and that's not any negative reflection on her Yirat Shamayim or on her husband's Yirat Shamayim. And if her husband thinks, a man thinks a woman's got Yirat Shamayim, then he should not marry her just because she's going to uncover her hair in the house and things like that. Certainly Me'ika Hadin, it's permissible. He discusses how much hair can a woman have uncovered. So, relating to this notion of Tefach B'Isha Erva, that Tefach of a woman's body that's usually covered is regarded as being Erva. So Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that a Tefach of hair uncovered would be regarded as Erva. And not more than that can be uncovered. Now, tefach, of course, is a fist's width. Now, on the face of one thing, so that means, how much is a fist? It's maybe 4 inches, eight or nine centimetres, something like that. So maybe a woman can have 8 or 9 centimetres protruding. There are those who suggest that with regard to Kisui Rosh, but actually Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't hold like that. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that no, because it needs to be a square tefach. So, usually if we're looking at a fringe at the front, so it's, the width of a woman's head is 2 tefachim, so it would be half a tefach in depth. But he's certainly comfortable with a woman exposing, 2 finger breadths of hair at the front of her snood or tichel or whatever it might be. There are those who've wanted to suggest that Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't really hold with what he wrote here, or didn't write it, or that he recanted on it. But the long and the short of it is that's what we've got in the Igrot Moshe. And without him explicitly rejecting it, I think it's followed by many people. Rav Nachum Rabinovich in Sheilot Tshuvot Siach Nachum Simon Kufhei, he looks at it slightly differently. He says that first of all, it's not, it doesn't say anywhere, how much hair a woman can have exposed, how much hair she can't have exposed. It's not clearly delineated, but he makes 2 observations. Number one, he makes the observation that it can't be that a woman, or it has to be that a woman has to cover Rav Sa'ar HaRosh, most of the hair on her head. She can't leave, most of her hair. She can't wear a small kippah sruga or a small black kippah for that matter, and say that that's hair covering. It's not. It needs to be most of her head is covered. That's number one. Number two, because that's what the Torah is demanding of us. Number two, and this is perhaps where the contemporary issue comes in, he says it needs to reflect sort of what the Rambam's called the Minhag HaTzniut Shenagu B'Not Yisrael. Normal modes of head covering in the social environment with which one finds oneself. And that, he says, is subjective. If you live in Bnei Brak, where, pretty much all religious women, cover their hair, and, they cover all their hair or 99% of their hair, so then it would be a breach of tzniut to live in Bnei Brak and not cover your hair entirely. On the other hand, if you live in a community where women do expose some of their hair, whether it's, you know, like Rav Menachem Rabinovich says, it can be, you know, more than a tefach perhaps, or whether it's like Rav Moshe Feinstein says, you know, limited to a tefach, to etzba'ot, or whether it's just, you know, a very small amount, you know, whatever it is, then you've got to abide by those standards of tzniut which are observed. Now, of course, these things can, you know, can change over the course of time, and they'll be affected perhaps by, you know, standards outside of the community as well, which will, you know, influence the Jewish community. We like to say we're not influenced, but, you know, the reality is, of course, that we are. And, of course, you know, change only, you know, with these things tends to happen because certain people start, you know, changing perhaps when they don't have a halachic legitimacy to do so. So, you know, you have a community where everybody covers their hair entirely, and then some women start leaving some hair uncovered, and then it sort of catches on, and more do that. So it's sort of a strange situation where the pioneers in this regard were doing it illegitimately, but maybe 20 years down the line, it becomes legitimate. It is an interesting notion, and it strikes me as being correct that issues of tzniut, you know, there are two dimensions. There's objective tzniut and subjective tzniut. You know, there are certain things which are, you know, objectively not tzanua. So I won't be, you know, crass and, you know, make reference to, you know, parts of the body, but there's clearly parts of the body, whatever, you know, people do round the streets of London on a hot day, you know, is not going to define tzniut for us. But even with, you know, head covering, so the Torah has told us, you know, from a Torah perspective, it's not tzanua for a woman to have her head mostly uncovered. You know, it has to be mostly covered. But, you know, beyond that, there is, you know, there's subjective tzniut, and, you know, it depends on what is the norm, for, you know, religious women in that community. Again, how you exactly define a community, you know, it's also an interesting question. You know, would we say that, you know, all of London is one community, all of Northwest London is one community? Does it matter, you know, if you're a member of Ner or Al Eitz Zion or Hendon Hadass or Toras Chaim or Raleigh Close? You know, exactly how you define, you know, community. What if you daven in one shul but you socialise in another shul? I don't know. But, you know, I think it's, you know, and perhaps one of the things is that, you know, Rabinovich is making the observation, you know, you can't give, you know, exact measurements in terms of centimetres and millimetres. No, it's not like that. It's, you know, perhaps more subjective and, you know, needs more sensitivity than just, you know, defining things by precise measurements. So, this is a whistle stop tour. I can see I've got some questions here in the chat, so I'm just going to look through these some of these questions. Note about my hay fever. Somebody's giving me their empathy. That's very good. I've heard of divorced women being allowed to uncover their hair in order to attract another husband. Is that covered in one of the later sources? That's Rav Moshe Feinstein addresses that and is quite bravely and uniquely lenient in this regard. And says that if a woman can't find parnassah or can't find a husband, there are grounds for her to not cover her hair. It shouldn't be taken as a blanket ruling, but on a case by case basis. But he's certainly opens the door for some leniencies there. According to the Siach Nachum, there's almost no incorrect way of covering your hair, because there's so many different groups of head coverings under Dat Yehudit. That's not entirely correct, because, of course, no, there is an incorrect way. In terms of, you know, whatever the norms are, you have to have most of, you know, Rav Se'ah HaRosh, most of your hair has to be covered. And then we've got, I know we've discussed it before, is it down to the physically attached hair is an issue of Erevah, but there are many wigs that attract attention and or bear a strong resemblance to the hair underneath the wig. Yeah, there's lots of discussions about wigs. Some poskim don't like them, some poskim do like them. Pok chazi mayama davar, go out, see what the minhag is. As far as that's concerned, I'm not going to address wigs this evening, or perhaps ever. It's not a crusade I want to go on. I think it's important, you know. Okay, having said I'm not going to address it, I'll make a few observations. You know, the issues are about, you know, some of the wigs are very 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 glamorous. And is that really in keeping with the sentiments of Minhag Tzniut Shenagu Benot Yisrael? Having said that, you know, for many women, especially in the modern world, you know, covering your hair is a real challenge for them. And, you know, they don't like having to fiddle with head coverings, or they don't like to wear head coverings in the workplace, etc. They don't want to look. One woman said to me once, she doesn't want to look like she's got a schmatter on her head. We have to be sensitive to all those concerns of, you know, of women. And, you know, whilst balancing, you know, the concerns of those poskim who feel that wigs aren't in conformity with the spirit of Dat Yehudit, there's also, you know, women's own sense of personal dignity in a world where a lot of value is attached to glamour. It might be true that we say every Friday night, Shekhar Chain Vehevel Hayofi. But it's, you know, it's a complicated world that we live in, and you know, sometimes you know, a priority has to be you know, women feel comfortable with themselves as well, and not making you know, excessive demands on them in this regard. Every woman has to make you know, the decision for herself as to what's right for her as far as the wig is concerned. I think I've got thoughts on the matter, but not going to share more than that, I'm afraid. Okay, Adkan for tonight.